Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight featuring commentary by liberal John McCarron of Northwestern University, Republican Lee Newcomb, and government practices consultant Gila Brunner. Our program tonight coming to you from our home base on the Sirius XM studios on Chicago's Great West Side, where our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email us a comment, our email address is btb@museum.tv. btb@museum.tv. And if you'd like to join us on the World Wide Web, our website address, www.beyondthebeltway.com. Well, tonight, we're going to be talking about government, government programs, government involvement in your life. We're going to be talking about the revolution that is out there in healthcare, whether there's going to be truly revolutionary change in the healthcare system in the country. We're going to be talking about the economy. We're going to be talking about the Cash for Clunkers, Cash for Clunkers program, which has proven to be very successful. We're going to talk about that primarily in the second hour. And I want to begin, however, by talking about the responsibility, whether it is the federal government or whether it is state government now, given the economic climate that we find ourselves in, given some calls for reform that are out there in much of the country. I want to find out whether government is up to the task and what are they doing to prepare themselves to deal with these multiplicity of programs, how they're communicating to the public about some of these changes, and whether or not the President of the United States is using all of his rhetorical skills to sell his packages. Some of the recent polls suggest that he's not, but we're going to be talking about that as the program this evening unfolds this evening. Gila Brunner joins us. She's a CPA. She heads her own firm, and she advises state governments and local governments all over the United States on economic issues and accountability issues. Accountability is your primary focus.
Absolutely.
But right now you have a fascinating responsibility, and you are advising entities about the American Recovery Act, and what exactly are you telling them? And how many of them are prepared to give all this money away that the taxpayers are giving away to them?
Bruce, I think that's a very good question. And I'd like to put it in the context of the landscape of the fact that virtually 50 of the 50 states have been experiencing significant budget deficits. We've been watching what's going on in the state of Illinois and across the country. And to that end, we've seen workforces being shrinking before our eyes, and that includes those in the areas of accountability, accounting, and financial management. Add on top of that now a program that's going to be infusing over $187 billion really directly into the hands of state and local government, and yet there was no money in the Recovery Act for oversight, accountability, and compliance. And so we're seeing right now that the Senate and the House are trying to address that. So governments, I think, are to some extent ill-prepared and are working very quickly to try to put in place oversight and accountability frameworks, particularly because GAO has announced and is already about to make its third visit to 16 states to ensure that they are indeed complying with the intent and creating jobs.
Why did they not spend some time in dealing with the issue of accountability?
I think they were so quick following on the heels of the TARP program and that guidance to get something out in terms of the stimulus act, much like we've seen relative to health care that I know we'll be talking about. The time is of the essence, and I think it was several hundred pages, the Recovery Act, and a lot of it was focused on the substantive programs, not thinking about who was actually going to be on the ground trying to ensure that those dollars were getting spent the way they were intended.
John McCarron also joins us this evening. He is a adjunct professor at the Medill School of Journalism at Northwestern University, but for 30-plus years he was a reporter and a columnist for the Chicago Tribune, a member of their editorial board for many years, and you've spent much of your professional career watching the conduct of elected officials and governments at various levels. As a citizen and as a journalist, What grade would you give government thus far in sort of throwing all this money out there for the American people to use to stimulate the economy?
Yeah, I could cop out, Bruce, and say an incomplete, but how about a solid B? You know, the easiest way to do stimulus is just to write folks checks, or it maybe use the tax rebate system, use the IRS system. That's been tried. The complaint was that a lot of people didn't run to their Walmart with their check, but they paid off their Visa bill or what, bought gasoline or whatever, not very sexy expenditures. When you start getting in the business of sending checks to local governments, state and local governments, to build things and to start programs and whatnot, it gets a little messier. I don't think really there is any such thing as a shovel-ready project. I think that was, I mean, people were saying, this
well,
is shovel ready.
Well, I disagree with that, John.
I know you have one of your own,
there's
Bruce.
There's one that I know that's shovel ready and green,
but
I'm not the only one.
And I think you could put a case, a plug in here for not-for-profit corporations can be a lot quicker in getting things out of the ground than can governments. Governments have to estimate, and they have to uphold a public bidding process. Mm-hmm. And this can be very time-consuming, and they have to put out a request for proposals. I know Gielen knows all this, but it's very cumbersome to build a bridge or to build a fire station or a police station, and that's what we're in that period now, I believe.
Lee Newcomb also joins us. He is our Republican tonight. He's also the recorder of McLean County in Central Illinois. Nice to have you back on the broadcast,
Bruce.
Lee. As an elected official. Looking at the elected officials that you interact with on a regular basis, are they ready with any plans to spend money once it's sent to McLean County, Illinois?
Well, being an elected official has even more reinforced my political beliefs in that you ought never to send much money to government, and you ought to strangle government wherever you can to keep it from spending money. Because when local officials get money from the federal government or the state money government, sometimes they spend it very well. I'd like to think I spend money very well in my office, and I see some officials that spend money in ways that I consider squandering money. I'll give you a good example. A few years ago when the Help America Vote Act was passed, I'm a county recorder in my state. That puts me in all the same meetings with all the county clerks who manage all of the elections. And I saw how those clerks spent the money sent to them from the Help America Vote Acts. A lot of wasted equipment was purchased, equipment that was never suited properly. I saw county clerks purchasing vehicles, purchasing things that were not necessarily needed, but they suddenly got some money, had to spend it, and I saw one county clerk spend the money on a new Chevy Suburban for his office. Well, what the heck does a county clerk need with a new Chevy Suburban? But he had the money, so he spent it. That's what government tends to do, and my being in government enforces my belief that we ought not to give government money whenever possible. Let it be spent by the private sector.
We're going to pause 1-800-723-8029 to get reaction from people listening coast to coast and border to border tonight. 1-800-723-8029. I'd like to talk about the confidence level. Everybody listening to the program this evening, what is the confidence level that you have in the government and their ability to send the dollars and to spend the dollars wisely? Back shortly from Chicago.
When you're really in pain, everything seems to add to it. Relief can't come fast enough. Now there's new Bayer Quick Release Crystals, a whole new form of pain relief from Bayer that dissolves quickly on your tongue. With an extra pain-relieving booster, it's ready to go to work faster than caplets or tablets, which take time to dissolve. So before you know it, you're feeling a whole lot better. New Bayer Quick Release Crystals with a bold citrus taste. Just rip, pour on your tongue, and expect relief fast. Take with water as directed.
Get the interview easily with my resume and everything, and then I'd walk in and I could just see their, you can just see their expression. They think I'm too old.
This is Andy from Sydney, Ohio.
And a friend just told me, one day, he said, why don't you try coloring your hair? And I said, worth a try. And the very next interview I had, I got the job. It could be coincidence, but I doubt it.
For essential career tips and a free offer, go to justformen.monster.com. That's justformen.monster.com.
From Worcester, Mass. To Bakersfield, California, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8229. We'll go to calls shortly. But one of the things I want to talk about, obviously, this evening is going to be health care. But it seems to me that all of the good intentions that President Obama had at the beginning of his administration and all the euphoria that was surrounding him from in the body politic, at least from many who obviously supported his campaign, was that the health care was going to be, this was going to be the big enchilada. This was going to be the big thing that he clearly was going to be able to deliver on. And yet in recent weeks, it seems to me that he has stubbed his toe. The groundswell of support for his program is lessening, not growing. And I think part of it, or at least I want to get your reaction, it seems that part of it is there is a reluctance, and whether it is because the Republicans have been promoting it or whether there's a general dissatisfaction in the body politic about government's ability to get things done, but it seems to me that the fear of big government is really what is keeping his numbers sliding. John McCarron, do you agree that that's one of the problems with this health care program, is a broader issue of the people just not trusting government to do anything right?
I think you're absolutely correct. I mean, this is the great ethos of talk radio. And, Lee said it best earlier when he said he wants to starve government because government can't be trusted to do this and that. There was one of the congressmen held a town hall meeting the other day, is a much quoted thing in this week's papers, and on health care, and one of his constituents got up and raised his fist and said, "Hey, you'd better not screw around with our health care," meaning Medicare. You don't let the government mess up Medicare. Yeah. And he had to, the congressman had to explain, well, that Medicare is the government. They hire an affiliate of Blue Cross Blue Shield to run the thing, but it's a government health program. So but you're absolutely right. It's the suspicion of the government can't do things.
Lee? Do you agree with that?
Yeah, there are certain things government can and should do. Building roads and bridges. Delivering on essential public services. My office. I'm a county recorder of deeds. My office needs to be well run. You need to have proper computer systems and proper record keeping and proper microfilming services and the things that we would do. Those things you don't want to starve. You don't want to starve the essential services that government needs to be engaged in. It's when you start throwing money around for government to do a lot of other things. That's when I see that you have a problem and that government is not best suited to do those things. And that's what I want to starve. I want to keep government from shoveling money into government because I do not see it as in any way, shape, or form, an efficient or a wise way to use money.
Gila?
Well, I think particularly around the issue of health care, it's very personal. There's a personal relationship that people have with their doctors, with however health care is being administered or provided to them now, whether it's through Medicare. I have elderly parents, and they care. They follow that very closely. They're very active AARP members. And I think that what we're seeing here around health care, there's a fear that because it isn't very clear at this point, we just pushed through a potential trillion dollar plan in the House of Representatives. The Senate still has yet really to put forth what their recommendations are. People are scared because they want to ensure that they're not going to lose something. People also want to know that their taxes aren't going to go up, or will they go up? What's the employer responsibility? There's so many unanswered questions, and even for someone such as myself, I try to read as much as I can, but it's hard to keep pace with exactly what's going on in Washington relative to this topic.
With the clients that you have, and obviously I'm asking you not just to talk about your clients, but to look in the broader field.
Sure.
Are there or is there a state in the United States whose track record of handling tax dollars or complicated programs with some degree of efficiency, is there a state or states that stand out for their efficiencies?
I think it depends on the nature of the program. My guess would be we could point to every single state in this nation, and there will be a particular program that they excel in because it's a priority of whoever might be running the state or the large local government at that time. Human service and health care is a particularly challenging one, and I will say that every meeting I've been to, whether it's state auditors, comptrollers, treasurers, governors, the topic at hand really revolves around Medicaid and the question as to how state governments are going to continue to provide the level and the care to whether it is those that have been going without or have had very, very basic levels of health insurance. So there's a sense that if we can solve the health care issue, it will go a long way to helping state government, which is pouring a very large percentage of its budget into health care. And
I want to go back to something you said at the beginning, though. You mentioned that the ability or the desire of elected officials, be they Republicans or mm-hmm. Democrats, to try to solve a problem. You can't. It's very difficult for an elected official to say, you know what, I choose to do nothing. Because yeah. whether it is a local media or it is talk radio on one side or the other, I mean, people, they want something done, mm-hmm. generally speaking. So to say that, you know, okay, we're going to do something for you and we're going to get the money to you as quickly as possible. But you said yourself, I mean, they did not take the time to put the rules and the regulations
That's right.
together. And yet that was less than 8 months after the banks were bailed mm-hmm. out and the American people knew rather quickly that there were no strings attached to the bailout. And the auto industry
Lest
as well.
We forget them.
So, I mean, it seems to me this is a complete disconnect between, solid thinking and trying to do the right thing, John.
Yeah, but if they had a whole lot of rules and regulations up front, we'd be sitting here talking about all the gosh darn rules and regulations.
Well, there could be some, though.
Yeah.
I mean, I know there's like 192 pages on the cash for clunkers, which we're going to talk about
second. For instance, the city of Chicago used stimulus money to double the number of kids they hired during their summer, Mayor Daley's summer youth employment program or whatever.
It's a political program.
Well, I guess not-for-profit community organizations tend to administer it. They're not all ward committeemen's sons and daughters, Bruce, honest. But
not all.
But for instance, they come out and they have their own – it's an income-tested thing. The family needs to be a certain income level, and they had this elaborate produce your tax returns and whatnot. All they had to do was use the federal school lunch eligibility criteria. But instead of doing that, they create a mound of paperwork, and now the not-for-profits in Chicago, and I suspect around the country, are struggling with that.
Well, it's also very interesting. Heretofore, OMB, the Federal Office of Management and Budget, and the General Accounting Office really have not had a direct relationship with state and local government. So they're accustomed to making rules and regulations for federal agencies that then pass money along to state and local government. So all of a sudden, we're asking bodies that really aren't equipped to necessarily they didn't have in place the right sort of operating framework to get rules, to actually think about what those rules are, because it's a very deliberative process to actually issue any kind of rules and regulations around administering federal programs. So I think it was the fast pace of this that really challenged what already, remember, it's a brand new administration. So there are many CFOs, chief financial officers, and inspector generals at federal agencies. Those positions haven't even been filled. So here we're getting out money. The oversight entities aren't even necessarily in place. They're being held up, whether it's for a Supreme Court nominee or deliberation on health care. But so we have a government, a new administration that has been so, I think, overwhelmed by the large number of issues and just trying to get something out quickly. So it's well-intentioned. It's just the administrative part hasn't caught up with it yet.
From a political perspective, Lee, a couple of weeks ago, Senator DeMint of North Carolina was basically quoted as saying that he hopes that, this is a way to really kill off the Obama plan. If
right.
we can stop him now, his Waterloo is coming up.
Right.
From a Republican perspective, there have to be some in your party that are cheering for continued failure. Is there not?
Sure. But my party has also not come up with, I believe, a coherent message. To me, something like this is a way that is used for educating the public about what it is we stand for and why we stand for it. And my party's doing an absolutely abysmal job, in my judgment, of actually doing that, of actually explaining why it is that the public option in health insurance is a bad option for our country. of explaining why government is not the proper entity to do this. Instead, they're
But they are. It seems to me they are raising the possibility that another government program can get screwed up. It seems to
me
that's you know, you can't have too many messages going to the body politic. Mm-hmm. It seems to me that they're winning on that particular message, which has caused the Democrats to sort of rethink their strategy. I mean, they're figuring out what they're going to be doing. I mean, right now, for the next month, the Congress is going back to their respective districts, so they're going to have their town halls. Mm-hmm. They're going to be hearing a lot from constituents. And it seems to me that the Democrats have now decided that they've got to find a boogeyman in this race.
And they're going to have insurance companies. Right, insurance companies.
And obviously, and the president talked about greedy doctors at his press conference last week either.
Interesting how he talks about something and we quickly find out how wrong he was, isn't it?
Well, there are greedy doctors, but I wouldn't generalize. I mean, maybe doctors shouldn't be allowed to have an economic interest in radiology equipment that they write prescriptions to have their patients go get tested at. Maybe there's some relationships there that ought not to exist.
Go ahead.
Well, I think, and without maybe you wanted to save the healthcare discussion till later, but I mean, the hard part is, I think that. What we need is a good dose of rationing, and we're paying globally in the United States, twice as much as the rest of the Western industrialized countries, and not getting nearly as good outcomes as many of them. And I think
I'm going to stop you right there. I'm going to let you make that point.
Because we have a cost plus system, Lee. That's why
we've got to be back shortly. 1-800-723-8289.
Shaquille O'Neal for Icy Hot.
I need pain relief that won't mess with my grip.
The new Icy Hot No Mess Applicator. Powerful, targeted, long-lasting pain relief now in a roll-on applicator. No mess. Just maximum strength medicine for back, shoulders, knees, even arthritis. Massages in icy to dull the pain, hot to relax it away.
Wherever I hurt, wherever I go.
Stop pain right at the source with the new Icy Hot No Mess Applicator.
No pain, no mess.
For temporary topical pain relief, use only as directed.
I'm a human resources professional.
This is Chet from Sneed's Ferry, North Carolina.
Gray means you're old, period. Long in tooth. I use Just for Men. It makes me perform better.
So we asked, should a guy get rid of his gray with Just for Men?
Absolutely. I flat out tell him, guy, you got to do something with your hair. You got to make yourself look younger because they cannot ask you how old you are.
For essential career tips and a free offer, go to justformen.monster.com. That's justformen.monster.com.
From Sacramento, California to Skokie, Illinois, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8029, from coast to coast and border to border every Sunday night. We're talking about the confidence level that voters have and citizens have in their government to deliver money and programs effectively and efficiently. There's been an awful lot of money being thrown around by the federal government to state governments and to the banking industry and the automobile industry, and a lot of those have come with very little strings and very little accountability, and we're going to be talking about that as the program continues this evening. And also in the second hour, we're going to be talking about the cash for Clunkers program, which is one that appears to be great success. But again, there's a lot of people that have concerns for that program as well. Our liberal tonight is John McCarron, and we describe him as a liberal because he probably is the most liberal person at the table, but he wears that badge proudly. He is a professor of journalism, adjunct professor of journalism at the Medill School of Journalism at Northwestern University, and for 30-plus years was a member of the editorial team at Chicago Tribune as a reporter, as a columnist, as a member of their board, and also does contributing work for the Tribune as well. And also joining us this evening is Lee Newcomb. He's our conservative Republican. He is the recorder in McLean County. That's in central Illinois, Bloomington, Normal area. And he also is, once upon a time, many years ago, was the political director of the Moral Majority.
Christian Coalition.
I always get those two mixed up, but they had the same goals. But you gave that up long ago.
Long time ago.
And It's good to have you back on the program.
Thank you, Bruce.
Always outspoken. Gila Bronner also joins us. She is a CPA. She's the head of her own company, the Bronner Group, and she advises state and local entities all over the United States on accounting and business practices, trying to bring accountability and efficiency to government. Yep. So that's a growth industry. And one of the things that you're working on is you're working with the state of Georgia and the city of Chicago on the American Reinvestment and Recovery Act. And one of the things that I want to get a sense of is how much of that money has actually filtered out from the federal coffers thus far.
Well, to date, it's been a relative small percentage of the overall $187 billion that's been allotted for the program, largely because, as you know, the federal government is on a different fiscal year end than most of our state and local governments, and that would be September 30th. So, for example, in the state of Illinois, money really, and not just Illinois, but state of Georgia, California, elsewhere around the nation, the money really has started to come in. Those dollars that weren't by formula. Competitive grants are going on as we speak. Governments are working feverishly to get their proposals in. A lot of the dollars around many of the road programs have gone out, at least the first pass of it. But much of it was actually budgeted for the next federal fiscal year. And governments are only now beginning to the first reporting period for how those dollars are being spent will be for October.
And how did they divvy up the money amongst the 50 states? What was the formula that was used to determine what does Georgia get and what does Illinois get?
Well, for the most part, many of them are categorical in nature. So whether it's education or energy, human service related, they're very much the same grants they've already been getting. And so a lot of them are per capita kinds of grants. They're based on population, based on a need and historical experience in those states. And so what the federal government has done is they've said, all right, Georgia, we're going to now increase your percentage in a proportionate way for an additional stream of money that you can use.
Initially, when the president talked about this stimulus package, he talked about new jobs that he was going to create, I believe, a couple of million new jobs. But then after about 2 or 3 months of talking in those terms, he said either new jobs or saving jobs.
Correct.
So when you look at a particular program, how do you go about estimating how many jobs really will be created by any one of these grants? How do they figure that out?
I think that is a very good question. Each government, I think, goes about it a little bit differently, based on the experience that they've had and the demographics of their particular locale. So what we're seeing is that governments right now are trying to figure out exactly how many jobs. I think it's somewhat easier in the capital-related kinds of programs where we're looking at building things. There's a good track record. On the human service side, much of it's based on caseload and how many families you can serve. There are different needs with different families across the country. So I think what we're seeing right now, we will begin for the first time, they have not reported yet, state and local government, and they have not even shared in terms of their own performance measures.
Is there anything in this bill, John, you've been watching it closely for a number of years, whenever there is a capital bill, and again, there has not been one in Illinois for 10 years, so it doesn't happen every year, but how do you guard against that that infusion of cash? How do you guard against corruption in the process? Is it used by Republicans and Democrats as basically a fundraising vehicle for their political careers?
Well, I wouldn't go so far as to say fundraising. I don't think there's a lot of quid pro quos that are attached to it. But pork barrel, yeah. If you look at the, for instance, Illinois, the Bush administration had killed off the Future Gen coal plant that was going to burn coal and sequester the noxious gases from it underground. It's a very far outer edge kind of a research thing, very expensive, multi-hundreds of millions of dollars. That was restored by the Illinois congressional delegation. So, I mean, that was a win for Illinois, and a lot of that went on. This was going on all over the country. So it was your traditional And I say pork lovingly because I'm not against pork per se. I think we need most of the things that the conservatives call pork. But that's the push and pull of the legislative process is how a lot of things got divvied up besides population and whatnot.
And so far as the pork, does an elected official have a greater sensibility about how dollars should be spent than a bureaucrat either in Washington or in the state capital? Because they're closer
really
to it, or are they more? I mean, are they more susceptible to corruption or a quid pro quo? Because frankly, if you can bring something back to McLean County, that person who is benefiting from that may contribute to your campaign.
To me, it's very bipartisan in the desire of elected officials to bring money back to the district and to be able to announce that they bought a post hole digger for this town and they got something dug and put in that town and a building in the other town. And they use that constantly to, in fact, buy votes. And so that does go on. In terms of management from one department to the next, I once again think it's very bipartisan. You can have a public servant, either elected or appointed, who are outstanding people that do an outstanding job of what they do and what the dollar they do. And you can have people that are absolutely horrendous, that waste money, that have no talent, that don't have really the ability to do it. That, for me, is the crux of the problem. When you get a person in private industry that is not good at the job, that can't do the job, that is not performing well or not executing in the job, private industry has the ability to cut that person and to move on. In government, we don't have that ability. Those people are entrenched. They're entrenched for sometimes decades, and that particular department or service will be badly run or inefficiently run for a very long time.
Jeff?
I was just going to point out the umbrella commentary here. Private industry, Wall Street, ran the economy into the ditch. And we're sitting here around this table criticizing the tow truck driver, saying, well, you brought too much paperwork that we have to fill out to tow that truck out. And be sure not to get any mud on the bumper when you pull it out. I mean, private industry to a large extent, unregulated financial speculation, and we aren't going to go into all the techniques of it tonight. But to be here caviling over too much paperwork or buying votes with pork barrel projects, it seems to me to be forgetting how we got down here in the first place that necessitated all this spending.
Well, if I may, I think so much of this revolves around transparency. With respect to the private sector, that was the whole impetus for the Sarbanes-Oxley bill. We can argue whether that has been successful or not.
Briefly describe what that was
really intended to introduce levels of accountability and transparency for publicly held companies. And we then have modeled, I think what you'll find is that there are many transparency aspects. In fact, President Obama, when he was a senator, co-sponsored, I believe with Senator McCain, the Transparency Act, which is a little-known piece of legislation that is now going to live on forever. But it was intended to make federal agencies transparent about who they were giving contracts to, how were they spending money, et cetera. And now we're seeing in the Recovery Act there are several provisions, rules and regulations, specifically around transparency, which is what there's requirements for all state governments to put in place, whether it's a website, a public website, or other mechanisms to ensure that they're letting the public know exactly where every dollar went, who got the contracts, were women used, minority firms, et cetera.
Do minority firms, women-owned firms, firms that deal with disabilities, green firms, I mean, in the current money that is waiting to be sent out, is there a pecking order? I mean, is there a criteria that's being used if you have a green program or if you have a program that benefits abused women? I mean, are you more likely to get your battered woman shelter built because it's dealing with a social ill that needs addressing?
It's less about the ill, but there are very specific requirements about using what's called DBEs, disadvantaged business enterprises, which could be female, minority, other types, to indeed, and many states did not have set-asides for WBEs and women and minority businesses, and they're required to do that as part of the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act.
We've got to be back, 1-800-723-8029. We've got calls on the line. We'll go to them when we come back from Chicago. We'll be right back.
past a certain point with the interviews.
This is Tamar from Washington, D.C.
Gray kind of says, does he have the energy to do the job?
And then Tamar tried Just for Men.
And when I went into the interview, I just went into the interview with a renewed energy or something. And it was the first time I left the place knowing I had the job. It really wasn't anything magical or anything, but it was magical to me.
For essential career tips and a free offer, go to justformen.monster.com. That's justformen.monster.com.
With welcome rewards from Hotels.com, you get a free night after accumulating 10 nights with any of their partner hotels.
So Hotels.com is telling me to sleep around.
Exactly. Stay at a boutique, a national chain, anywhere. Sleep around.
Is that ethical?
Of course. Who wouldn't want you to sleep around?
My wife.
With Hotels.com, she can sleep around too.
What did you say?
You know what? That didn't come out right.
Accumulate 10 nights, even at different hotels, and earn a free night. Welcome rewards from Hotels.com. Smart. So smart. Some restrictions apply. See site for details.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. Let's go to Knoxville, Tennessee, where Michael is listening to us on WNOX. Thanks for calling us at 1-800-723-8289. Go ahead.
Hello?
Michael, are you there? Yeah, I know you've been very patient. I didn't want to make sure you didn't fall asleep there.
Yes, sir, I'm here. I apologize.
That's right.
First thing I'd like to say is that I haven't heard anybody call a country as a country, its government and civil servants, as inept, ineffective, and corrupt as the Republicans have been portraying our country, its government and civil servants, as in the waning days of the old Soviet Union. And basically, I'm beginning to resent that. The second thing is that according to the office of Congressman Eric Cantor, which I had the pleasure of meeting with one week ago today, the government cannot really create or engage in commercial enterprise because it's prohibited. There are laws on the books that prohibit the government from engaging in any form of commercial enterprise, and it must therefore subcontract all its work to private enterprise. And the third thing is that I believe there is already a monitoring system that was set up after the Republican fiasco of Katrina that would do good to help with this affair that we currently face. I will hang up and listen to what you guys have to say, and thank you for taking my call, Bruce.
Okay, your reaction, Gila?
I'm not sure
he
which...
Basically wanted, he thought there were some oversights in place. I mean, the Government Accounting Office is generally the office, and their reputation is fairly good, is it
not? Yes, GAO. GAO actually is an arm of the Congress and is able to go out, conduct special reviews and audits. It's separate from the inspector generals that actually work in each of the federal agencies. What's new here is that GAO is now providing oversight, actually, as I mentioned, to 16 states that have been selected with respect to the Recovery Act to look at their progress. There are many structures in place for oversight. I think when he was mentioning about not going into to business, my guess is that was relative to healthcare and what some of the potential options are that are being considered right now.
You mentioned earlier in the program, John, that maybe the best thing would have been to just send a check to everyone. What does your gut tell you about what people would do? I mean, literally, you know, with all these rules and all these regulations, just find out how much you're going to send, divide it up by certainly the census can tell you the number of people we have, you know, different ages, maybe get different amounts. What would have happened if the money just would have been sent out directly to the taxpayer?
Well, this has been done. I mean, this was the first thing that was
right.
done. And I think
a relatively small amount of money.
George Bush got the ball rolling, and it may be done again. People think we need another round of same. I mean, the beauty of it is you just issue checks and flush the money out into the population. I think most people would insist that there be some needs testing because the poorer you are, the more apt you are to go down to Walmart and spend it as soon as you get it, which is exactly what you're looking for. But that's absolutely the easiest way to do it. I think the problem this time around is because of this over-leveraging phenomenon where so many people owed money that they didn't run out and buy new stuff. They just paid down paid down their plastic.
Or they put it into their – you know, after all these stories about how Americans don't save, some people may have saved it for a rainy day. and then they're criticized for doing that.
Yeah, which is one of the reasons that when you hear Wall Street talk shows and whatnot about the economy, all this talk about green shoots and whatnot, well, the deleveraging process has just begun, both in the corporate world and, but more importantly, in the household world, where people are just beginning to get caught up on their payments, so they're not paying vicarish to Visa and MasterCard from month to month.
And what is your sense as to the slowness with which the economy is moving? The president again is saying this full recovery is going to take a long time. There's nothing fast that's happening here. I mean, how patient do you think the American people are going to continue to be? Again, the polls are starting to slide. And again, well, Barack Obama is not used to being in a position where his poll numbers are going down.
I think what's happening now is absolutely inevitable. The crash occurred before January 20th, if memory serves. But you just knew that month after month he would begin to wear the jacket more and more because it would become his economy and certainly his recovery program that he was being judged by. So, I mean, this is sort of inevitable. But again, I beg, you know, the car was already in the ditch, and we can criticize the tow truck driver all we want, but just remember how the car got in the ditch.
Yeah. Well, that of course would be one of the great disagreements we would have is how the car got in the ditch. To me, this is a classic case of when the government gets involved and the government starts trying to manipulate markets, the government runs us into the ditch. It was the government that allowed the derivatives to happen. It was the government that forced the banks to loan into populations in areas where the loans would not be good.
That's not true.
That is true. And when it happened, that is what drove the banks into the ditch, and that's what started the whole mess.
You say true, you say not true. So why is it not true?
In fact, the president and CEO of Bank of America, the largest commercial bank, just made a speech the other day in Chicago saying that this business about the Community Reinvestment Act and Fannie and Freddie being responsible for what happened has zero credibility to it. I know that's the mantra.
Who's responsible for it then?
Well,
what drove ING
Wall
under?
Street, countrywide, ING, many thousands of really bad, stupid decisions by people who ought to know better in the private sector, manipulating and doing financial engineering.
As well as people trying to buy something they can't afford.
And what happened to them?
Is that part of it?
And what happened to them when their bad decisions? We disagree about how bad decisions were made, but what happened to them once the party had to be paid? What happened? The government bailed them out.
We've got to pause on that note. We are out of time for hour number one. If you're watching us on television, we're going to see you next week. If you're listening to us on radio, we have another full hour. And in the next hour, we'll pick up this discussion. We'll talk about health care. And we're going to begin the second hour by talking about the Cash for Clunkers program. Have you bought your new car yet? 1-800-723-8029. I'm Bruce Dumont. 1-800-723-8029 from coast to coast and border to border. From Chicago.
I'm Felix. I've been doing body art and tattoos for over 15 years. It's amazing. I get people in here all the time who ask me about fading or removing a tattoo they don't want anymore. Up till this year, I've really had nothing to help that is effective and painless. And then I discovered Wrecking Balm. It's an easy three-step daily fading system. Just a few months, the darkest, deepest pigments, they easily start to fade without any discoloring, blemishing, or scarring the skin. Wrecking Balm is really the best thing for tattoo regret. It's my only recommendation if you want to clear the canvas of some real funky body art.
Wrecking Balm, the devastatingly effective tattoo fade system. Undemanding daily fading. Zero pain. Zero discomfort.
Call right now for your in-home 60-day risk-free trial of Wrecking Balm at 1-800-507-4206. That's 1-800-507-4206. Fade your tattoo now by calling 1-800-507-4206. That's 1-800-507-4206.
Introducing Ally Bank's 9-month no-penalty CD with an interest rate of 1.9% APY. Just to make that perfectly clear, that's a no-penalty CD. No penalty for early withdrawal, medium or late withdrawal, no extra fees, forfeiture, and no fine print anywhere. Just a high-interest 9-month no-penalty CD that lets you move your money anytime, anywhere. It doesn't get any more straightforward than that. Call Ally at 877-247-ALLY or go to allybank.com. Ally. Straightforward. Member FDIC.
When you're really in pain, everything seems to add to it. Relief can't come fast enough. Now there's new Bayer Quick-Release Crystals, a whole new form of pain relief from Bayer that dissolves quickly on your tongue. With an extra pain-relieving booster, it's ready to go to work faster than caplets or tablets, which take time to dissolve. So before you know it, you're feeling a whole lot better. New Bayer Quick-Release Crystals with a bold citrus taste. Just rip, pour on your tongue, and expect relief fast. Take with water as directed.
Shaquille O'Neal for Icy Hot.
I need pain relief that won't mess with my grip.
The new Icy Hot No Mess Applicator. Powerful, targeted, long-lasting pain relief now in a roll-on applicator. No mess. Just maximum strength medicine for back, shoulders, knees, even arthritis. Massages in icy to dull the pain, hot to relax it away.
Wherever I hurt, wherever I go.
Stop pain right at the source with the new Icy Hot No Mess Applicator.
No pain, no mess.
For temporary topical pain relief, use only as directed.
Chemical plant I'd worked at for 12 years shut down, and I was looking for another place to work.
This is Danny from Baton Rouge.
And I think that first impression they get sometimes is a little too old. You know, why should we mess with him?
Then Danny got rid of his gray with Just for Men.
You know, they're not seeing the gray in the mustache, and they're not seeing the gray in the side of my hat. You know, if you feel better about yourself, you're going to feel better about everything else.
For essential career tips and a free offer, go to justformen.monster.com. That's justformen.monster.com.
Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont. We continue with hour number two of Beyond the Beltway. Tonight featuring commentary by liberal John McCarron of Northwestern University, conservative Republican Lee Newcomb of McLean County, Illinois, government practices consultant Gila Brunner, and soon we will be hearing from Paul Bryan, host of WLS Radio's Drive Chicago, and automobile dealer John Stewart. And we are going to be talking with them and hopefully with you and taking your telephone calls at 1-800-723-8289 because in this hour, one of the things we're going to be talking about is the Cash for Clunkers program. It's been on all the newscasts, all the newspapers. It's been really one of the hot programs. Some are describing it as a successful government program, maybe a little bit too successful. And that is one of the things that we'll be discussing in the next hour. Cash for Clunkers has succeeded so wildly, in fact, in moving cars off America's automobile lots, it's already running on empty. As Ben Stewart tells us, this popular program could soon be in the country's rear view mirror. Ben?
It's not every week that dumpsters filled with old cars show up on dealers' lots as advertisements to buy new cars. But this was no normal week for the auto industry. The Car Allowance Rebate System, better known as Cash for Clunkers, started on July 24th. It offers up to $4,500 from the federal government should people turn in their old clunker for a new, cleaner car with better gas mileage. Companies chipped in their own incentives. Chrysler even matched government cash, and the program overheated. By late last week, just days after the program started, its billion-dollar budget was sputtering toward empty. A $2 billion government refueling could keep Cash for Clunkers rolling, but the busy Senate must approve it first. Even with those speed bumps, Transportation Secretary Ray LaHood said the program will run through Tuesday. By week's end, Cash for Clunkers could keep cruising or head to the junkyard for good. From Beyond the Beltway, I'm Ben Stewart.
And we are now joined by Paul Bryan, who hosts Drive Chicago on WLS, our flagship station. Paul, nice to have you with us.
Thank you, Bruce. I appreciate the invitation.
In addition to being a veteran broadcaster for the past 30-plus years, you have also been the chief spokesman and communications director for the Chicago Automobile Trade Association. Insofar as people who have radio programs, you probably know more about the automobile industry than anyone. And I want to just speak to one point that that Ben referenced, and our guest Lee Newcomb and I were talking about it during the news break, and that is one of the reports is that if you go in to buy a Chrysler, you can get the $4,500 off if you qualify. And Chrysler is going to throw another four. They're going to take another $4,500 off.
It's really
so
remarkable.
Is Chrysler going to make any money on this deal at all?
Well, you know, some you've got the program in place, the Cash for Clunker program in place. So that is $4,500. And you're right. You could conceivably apply $9,000 to the cost of or to your end of buying a new vehicle from Chrysler. It's really quite astounding, and. And the program is very much accomplishing what it was intended to do, which is twofold. A, move new vehicles off of inventory. Chrysler needs to get those cars sold and on the road and rolling so that they can kick their lines back up. Remember when they went into bankruptcy, they shut down the lines. So you've got a lot of inventory that's sitting there that needs to get cleared out. If this program works the way it it is working the way they expected. It's actually working beyond what they expected. They're going to be able to go ahead and fire those lines back up, get people back to work. So, you know, yeah, it's very much doing its job.
Philosophically,
you could argue with it as to whether or not it's the government's business to be in there in the first place, but it's there.
What is the criteria? What is a clunker as defined by this program?
Less than 25 years old. So you do the math on that.
Okay.
And then if you trade a car that gets anywhere from 4 to 9 miles per gallon better than what you're trading in, you get $3,500 cash from the government. If it's 10 or better, you get $4,500 back from the government.
And how do they measure that, and how do they prove that?
It's based on the EPA fuel consumption ratings, which are available on fueleconomy.gov. So you'll be able to go back, and if you've got a 1992 Fuji Manoli, who knows what, you'll be able to go in there and say, okay, this is what the mileage rating was for that. In order for me to qualify, I need to have something that's going to be at least 4, up to 9, for $3,500, or beyond 10 and beyond for $4,500.
One of our guests this evening, Gila Bronner, in the first hour, she was talking about she's involved with the American Reinvestment and Recovery Act and working with states and governments about whether or not, putting the criteria and checking the effective and the efficiency of these programs. Based on your conversations with automobile dealers within your sphere of influence, Paul, was there significant advanced information given to the automobile dealers, or are they trying to maybe catch up with some of the knowledge and the specifics of this program after it already started?
It's been tough because not only was the information given out by the government late in the game, I mean, the dealers basically got this 135-page Byzantine set of rules the night before the program was to start, but beyond that, during the program, and I can't give you an answer to this, but somehow in the mix, some vehicles that are being evaluated for what their EPA rating was, some have been eligible, and then all of a sudden the numbers have changed on those midstream, and nobody has an answer for that. So, you know, you might have had a car that qualified for it on Wednesday, but on Thursday all of a sudden it didn't. Or it might have been less.
Lee Newcomb's got a comment.
Paul, I try and set my Saturday mornings always listen to your program. I wish people nationally could hear your program. It's a tremendous program.
Thank you.
Yesterday morning I was listening and heard somebody call in about buying a new Chrysler for $9,000.
Correct.
And we're looking for a used car for my daughter, and we have an old minivan, and I said, let's go. We went down to the Chrysler dealer and tried to buy a Jeep Compass, which would have come out to about $9,500, which would have been a great car for my high school daughter. But you know what, Paul? There wasn't a Compass anywhere in the state of Illinois. I called all over, and the dealers just said that there are no Compasses anywhere in Illinois. My question for you is, how does Chrysler, who's on the ropes, how do they make this actually account for them? Because if they turn the production turn the production lines on now to fill all these dealer lots that are empty. And I don't know if you went out shopping yesterday, but the dealer lots are empty everywhere, every make. They're spreading cars out on all these lots trying to fill them up. It's been so successful.
I had a friend of mine who was looking for a particular Toyota truck, and I got into the soup trying to help him personally. And I finally found one in West Allis, Wisconsin, and Jimmy had to take a ride up to Wisconsin to find it.
But my question is, how does this affect Chrysler? Because if they turn the lines on now and their sales fall
it's too late.
Yeah, if the sales fall in the dumpster now when it's over, what's it done?
I want to talk more about that. We do have to pause. 1-800-723-8029 is the telephone number. Paul Bryan is joining us. We've given his expertise on the automotive industry. And also in the next segment, we're going to hear from John Stewart, who owns an automobile dealership. And we're going to hear about some of the downsides and some of the losers in the Cash for Clunker program. 1-800-723-8029. I'm Bruce Dumont.
I've worked in the dot-coms and in technology for the last 20 years. I noticed that there were a lot of younger guys, and I started not getting jobs.
This is John from Utah.
You were treated differently if you had gray hair and you were an older guy, and that's not only just at work, but everywhere.
Then John got rid of his gray with Just for Men.
You know, I started getting jobs, and they don't think of me as an old guy. The majority of the people I associate with are 20 or 30 years my junior, and I get along just fine with them.
For essential career tips and a free offer, go to justformen.monster.com. That's justformen.monster.com.
When you're really in pain, everything seems to add to it. Relief can't come fast enough. Now there's new Bayer Quick Release Crystals, a whole new form of pain relief from Bayer that dissolves quickly on your tongue. With an extra pain-relieving booster, it's ready to go to work faster than caplets or tablets, which take time to dissolve. So before you know it, you're feeling a whole lot better. New Bayer Quick Release Crystals with a bold citrus taste. Just rip, pour on your tongue, and expect relief fast. Take with water as directed.
From Pontiac, Michigan to Cadillac, Michigan, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8029. We're talking about the Cash for Clunker program. And joining us now with a different and unique perspective on this is John Stewart. John Stewart, this is not the comedian. This is John Stewart, the former professional wrestler. He's run for Congress several times against in Rahm Emanuel's old district. So he's taken on sort of tough races in predominantly Democratic areas. But he also, he and his family have been involved in the automobile business for a long, long time. And John, before the program, when we spoke several hours ago, you see that there's a significant big loser with this Cash for Clunker program. Who is it, in your view?
Well, you know, as people have credited me when I ran for Congress, you know, I happen to live in something called reality. And, you know, first I just want to say, as a Republican who just ran for Congress, I voted for Barack Obama. So I'm not coming on here to bash the administration or take down the buzz that is going on in the economy with this burst of new car business. But it's like our country has just downed an energy drink. And we know what happens a couple hours after you take an energy drink and you come off that buzz. And I think with most people, Bruce and Paul, how are you? And nice to speak with you today.
You too.
What most people, certainly not anyone in our government, is not anticipating is the blowback effect that I think this program will have. It'll have it on the lower income families, our future generations with the debt load, and our environment. And if you give me just 3 minutes, I've got some very lucid points. You know, the government is taking 250 to 350,000 cars off the streets between $1,000 and $4,500. These are cars that a person like myself would have bought, reconditioned, and wholesaled at auctions to other used car dealerships or sold at my family's car dealership. We don't have that supply capacity anymore and won't in the future. You know, when you greatly diminish the supply, you know, to any of our economic 101 students, low supply, high demand, inflated prices. So the lower income people or people looking for a second cheap car for their child or their kid or for themselves, they're going to take the pipe. They're going to start paying higher prices. And it's happening already because I could see it from the cars that I'm taking to the auction. And in a society that is so
Let's let Paul respond.
I think you're forgetting one of the basic tenets of this program is to take vehicles that are Citagon lots that are a lot more fuel efficient, a lot safer than the vehicles are that are being turned in. You know, if you've got a beater that's worth $1,000, and you're willing and you're able to get $4,500 for it, you got to have rocks in your head to not take that car. And there's still going to be, come on, you can't argue that we're short on beaters.
Paul, you're not at the auctions. I'm there every day. I am in the trenches. I am in the back of dealerships every day looking at the trade-ins. If you think that we're heroes taking a 2001 Ford Windstar that gets 19 miles per gallon off the street, that makes no sense. And if I could finish here. And number two, what are the dealers going to do in December, January, February, and March when everyone who would have bought a car then is off the market? I mean, I hope dealers put some of this profit away for the cold months because it's going to get really cold. And when there's no new car business in the winter, there's going to be no supply of the trades again. And what is that going to happen to the $1,000 and $4,500 car? The price is going to be inflated. I am at four auctions a day. The prices on cheap cars are through the roof. And who's going to pay for that? Not one of my neighbors in Deerfield or Lake Forest. You know who's going to pay for it and who's going to take it again from our government? It's going to be that family in Cicero that's looking for a 2001 or two minivan for $4,000 or $5,000. They're going to pay $6,500.
John, which new car franchises do you represent?
I don't. My family owns an independent car dealership, so I am
so
selling.
You're not a franchise new car dealer. You're not part of my organization, is what I'm asking.
Exactly. And part of my job is to go to these franchise dealers and buy their.
Well, that was an answer to my question. My question was, you're not a franchise new car dealer, correct?
No, you're a used car dealer. By the way, John McCarron has a question for everybody, so let's John McCarron has the floor.
Well, as long as we have these two excellent car guys on here, I haven't bought a car in a long time.
Shame on you.
However, you know, it's a mystical process buying a car, and there's MSRP, which really doesn't exist, and then there's the dealer's cost, and that's a state secret, and there's ups and extras, and there's cost of financing,
wow.
And winterizing and rust proofing and all that, and you really don't know what you should be paying. And now the government comes and bless their souls, they're throwing in another fungible $4,500 bucks. How do you know whether you're actually getting your $4,500 bucks off the price you would have paid without the government?
Because it comes right off the bottom of the deal.
How do you know where the bottom of the deal is?
Go ahead, Paul.
I'm going to explain that to you. You negotiate the deal as if you've got $4,500 in your pocket. So go ahead and make your deal. Do your research. Get on the internet, and it's really not the crystal ball that you're making it out to be. Nor is it the it just doesn't have the mystery that it had before, because you can go on the net and you can find 10 places that'll give you the actual cash value of that vehicle, the wholesale cost of that vehicle. So then you just negotiate the deal, find the car, and then at the end that $3,500 or $4,500 is added into what you are allowed as trade-in or other value to that deal.
Would you then recommend...
And going to debt for $25,000. That's another thing that really bothers me. We have just or coming out of the most uncontrolled...
Well, you just want to go in debt for $5,000 for your beater. So what are you arguing about? You're probably making bigger grosses on a used car.
Our beaters. We're going
folks, one at a time. Everybody can talk, but we got to talk one at a time. Right. John, go ahead.
Yeah, okay. one last question.
The most uncontrolled spending spree in human history. Foreclosures are sky high. Personal debt is through the roof. We have now sucked in 300,000 people on taking a car payment for $250 to $800 a month. Insanity. And wait a minute. What about the 300,000 cars that are going to have to be scrapped? The 300,000 gallons of waste oil, 300,000 gallons of transmission fluid, 1.2 million used tires that are going to have to be scrapped, 300,000 batteries that are going to have to be scrapped. Where are the environmentalists here? The amount of gas and energy that is going to take to recycle 300,000 cars, are we really gaining anything?
Stop for a second.
But a guy in LaGrange got $4,500.
One second, John.
So everything is great.
John, one second.
I'm sorry.
John McCarron has a comment now.
Yeah, I think you make some excellent points, by the way. But I have one last buyer's observation, and that is to Paul. Good explanation about how to go about this, but does that mean when you walk into the dealership, you don't let on that you have an old car to throw into the deal?
No, No, they know it. Be upfront about it. I would be absolutely upfront about it and say, look, I'm trying to take advantage of this program. I think that the days of the adversarial, pardon me, the adversarial relationship of the buyer and the seller have really gone by the wayside at this point, because right now you've got dealers out there, you've got franchise new car dealers with inventory that they have to move. So what we try to advise people to do, and what I advise them to do, is bring that dealer into your fold and make him your ally in the thing. Don't make him your adversary. And I think that you're going to find that dealers who are brick and mortar guys and women in the community, they're going to try to do everything they can to help get people into cars right now, because they have to. They have to. And the industry has really gone through wholesale changes.
Gila Bronner's got a question, we'll go.
One last quick buyer question. Do you negotiate the same way if I'm not bringing you a clunker?
I don't think that matters. If I'm going to buy a new car.
As long as your vehicle meets the criteria for the government program.
No, but I'm just suggesting if I'm coming in just to buy a new car, no clunker involved.
Yeah.
Okay.
Are you going to negotiate the same way for the same vehicle knowing that there isn't a back end?
John Stewart, what's your answer to that question?
Well, most dealers are selling new cars for invoice. So telling somebody you've got a clunker, in my opinion, is not going to change the schematics of the deal. And Paul is right. Most the days of the patent leather white shoes and the plaid jacket, that's over. I mean, we are a very service oriented business right now, whether you're selling a used car or a new car. So I think most dealers are concerned about getting the paperwork and getting the transaction into the government computer, which is a whole nother situation.
Yeah. Now we've got another topic of conversation, and boy, we got some cheesed off dealers at this point, and rightfully so.
And nobody has gotten a dime. I don't know one new car dealer that is a friend of mine or I do business with that is all around the country that has gotten 1 cent from the United States government. Not one check in my knowledge has been written to anybody.
In this particular case, Paul Bryan, to you, in this particular case, what is the waiting period that a dealer must now wait before they get paid once they close these deals?
Nobody,
and I understand
knows.
This. Nobody knows.
That's the thing. We've got some dealers out there right now who are still trying to get through the government computers for the dealership qualification portion of this. Just to say, okay, look, I'm a franchise new car dealer. I qualify. Quack, quack, quack. I go through this whole 134-page Byzantine set of rules. And they go ahead and they do that, and the computers are breaking down. They're hiring. Here's the job benefit that they've got. They are hiring admin people to fill in this paperwork from midnight to 8 in the morning, because that's when the computers have the least number of
admin. Well, I will tell you that I recently, before all this began, before this program was launched, I went out and bought a car. I went out and bought a used car. Okay. It was a Chrysler. From CarMax, I thought I was well treated from a sales perspective. But when it came to fill out the paperwork, it took almost 2 hours to fill out the paperwork. Then they screwed it up, and they screwed it up for another 2 hours for the next 5 days. That was just the paperwork,
Bruce,
because
can
of
you
the collection.
The problem CarMax is going to have selling 1 and 2 year old cars, knowing that those cars are probably worth $3,000 less, and they've got probably 25,000 cars in stock across the country.
To Paul Bryan, nothing
is wrong, and it's Pollyanna all over America. It's not the case.
Well, we're going to listen. Stay right where you are. We'll be back shortly from Chicago.
Easily with my resume and everything, and then I'd walk in and I could just see their expression. They think I'm too old.
This is Andy from Sydney, Ohio.
And a friend just told me, one day, he said, why don't you try coloring your hair? And I said, worth a try. And the very next interview I had, I got the job. It could be coincidence, but I doubt it.
For essential career tips and a free offer, go to justformen.monster.com. That's justformen.monster.com.
Shaquille O'Neal for Icy Hot.
I need pain relief that won't mess with my grip.
The new Icy Hot No Mess Applicator. Powerful, targeted, long-lasting pain relief now in a roll-on applicator. No mess. Just maximum strength medicine for back, shoulders, knees, even arthritis. Massages in icy to dull the pain, hot to relax it away.
Wherever I hurt, wherever I go.
Stop pain right at the source with the new Icy Hot No Mess Applicator.
No pain, no mess.
For temporary topical pain relief, use only as directed.
From Chicago, Illinois to Detroit, Michigan, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8029 on America's great radio stations as well as Sirius and XM satellite radio. We are talking in the studio with John McCarron from Northwestern University. He is a journalist with the Chicago Tribune and spent 30 years there. He's now there on a part-time basis, contributing basis, I guess is the better way of putting it. Lee Newcomb is here. He is our conservative Republican. He's the recorder of McLean County. We're talking about cash for clunkers and government practices consultant. Gila Bronner also joins us. She's the head of her own firm, Gila Bronner & Associates. And on the line with us is the host of Drive Chicago on WLS Radio, Paul Bryan. For 30 years, he's been the voice of the automotive industry on Chicago radio. John Stewart was with us. He is in the automobile business. I had said to John he was a last-minute guest on our program. He's going to be on the show in studio in a couple of weeks. So we say goodbye to John Stewart, but we're going to pick up on some of his points, and we're going to take calls in just a moment. But John McCarron in the studio, you had some interesting assessments of John Stewart's comments tonight.
Well, I think maybe this is one of those cases where a program was put together rather in a lickety-split, and it's an enormous success from a marketing standpoint. I mean, this is a huge PR rush here. But yeah, the cost of transporting these vehicles to where they need to be recycled, a lot of the materials coming out of the car is tantamount to toxic waste. I'm talking about contaminated motor oil and what they call fluff, the upholstery and whatnot has minimal value. In fact, it's hard to find places that'll landfill the stuff. And I suspect that we're going to be reading stories in the media for weeks to come as these problems become more and more apparent.
Paul Bryan, I'm going to give you a chance to respond to that, but I want Lee Newcomb to sort of weigh in on a political question following up on what John just had to say, and also get Giller's response as well. Does this apparent success, but when you look at it in a couple of weeks, there's going to be all kinds of stories, not only about the things that John Stewart has spoken about, but there's going to be the stories about the checks that never arrive. There's going to be stories about the screw-ups with some of the administration of the program. And this will be perceived as maybe a good idea for government, but poorly administered, poorly planned. Paul Bryan has already talked about not much advance, preparation for the program. And is this another thing in the mindset of the voter that makes them really question whether or not they want their government involved in the delivery of health care in any way?
Yes.
Your point.
Yes.
Great.
There are so many examples here. I wrote a piece in IllinoisReview.com this week about this very thing, and I called it Cash for Clunkers Healthcare, because there are so many things here you can see this. A great one, I think, is about the dealers are required by the government to destroy the motor. By the way, there were some great points what's his name? The guy that just left.
John Stewart.
John Stewart made. I tried to trade in a Ford 2002 Windstar yesterday, 120,000 miles. It's a good vehicle. That's the kind of vehicle that a dealer would have taken and reconditioned and sold that for probably, it's worth about $1,500 wholesale. And a dealer probably would have reconditioned it. They would have sold it then to people of lesser means for maybe $4,500, $5,000. It would have been a very good car for a family to buy that does not have the means to buy a new car or a more recent used car. That car will be destroyed under this because, once again, Democrats don't care about poor people. They only care about ideology. So how do we destroy these cars? Now, the government could easily account for cars that are sent to the wrecking yard. They can track this with VINs today. It's all easy. But, oh, no, they decide the dealer has to destroy the engine. And if the dealer doesn't destroy the engine, the dealer can face a fine of $15,000. Now, Paul, if a guy is going to send a whole bunch of cars to the wrecking yard, maybe 20, 30, 100 cars, some of these dealers, what's the easiest way to send them? They put them on a transporter, don't they?
Yeah.
Okay, and how many cars are on a transporter?
Probably 15.
And how does the car get on the transporter?
It has efficiently with diesel-powered trucks.
Okay, but it has to have a working motor to get on the transporter because they're driven on the transporter. But under the government program, the dealer has to destroy the motor, which means all the vehicles have to go to the wrecking yard what? On a wrecker.
Hey, you're talking to an Army veteran. You think this is new?
Okay. So this is what the government does. The government makes anything more efficient and less and vastly more expensive.
We'll be there, Paul, in 1 second, but I want to get Gila's response as well. Speak to my point.
I will.
Does this program represent maybe the worst possible program that the American people do understand, and it has the potential of being so screwed up, it will be the death knell for Obama's health care program?
Oh, we could hope.
Well, I think there are a couple aspects to this that I'd like to comment on. One is just we talked about it being good PR, but the question is how many people all across America, whether it's urban or rural America, how were they made aware of the program? Were they made aware of the program? I think the citizen pushback will come from a lot of folks that are finding out about it after the fact that would have liked to have taken advantage of it.
Well, I found out after I bought a car. By the way, Paul, I should have called you first, but I got rid of my car. Ready for this? I got rid of my 2001, 2004 rather, Cadillac Catera, because it didn't pass the EPA test in Illinois.
Yeah.
And my Cadillac dealer said, you know what, it's best to get rid of it because there's been a systemic problem with it, so buy a new car. And I didn't buy a new car because I didn't know about cash for clunkers, because I think my old car probably would have been eligible for that. But I went out and I bought, I bought a 2006 a Chrysler Touring car from CarMax.
Well,
I love the car, but I probably could have made a wiser deal, you know,
five days later.
Well, I would think that you would have to, A, be in a bunker with Osama bin Laden, not know about this program at this point. I mean, everybody has heard about this, and I don't care if it's here in Chicago or in Nataclay, Texas. I mean, everybody knows about this program. One of the big problems when they ran out of money the other night was that over the weekend there was a great deal of advertising that was scheduled to run, network TV, network radio, print, wherever, that all of a sudden they say, wait a minute, hold on, we don't know if this is going to be funded or not. And so that was pulled back, and then they said, is it on, is it off, whatever. So there's been a great deal of activity.
Well, the Senate still has to approve it for the extension of the extra $2 billion.
The original request on this was for $4 billion. I mean, for the billion that we have right now, remember the original request from the House months ago was for $4 billion. The Senate pared it down to $1 billion. So now the House has come along and said, we need two, and we'll see what Harry Reid's gang does with this when they get a hold of it.
We've got Sam listening to us in Peoria, Illinois, on WLS. Go ahead. You got a good question, Sam. Go ahead.
Yeah, how are you, Bruce?
Hi.
Listen, I think what this shows is that all of this bailout money that went for the auto manufacturers early on, it was totally wrong, and that what they should have done is they should have given people tax credits for buying new cars. And I think it would have stimulated the industry big time. And I have a different opinion as to whether or not this is good for health care. I think this is absolutely the perfect model for health care, and it was the McCain plan. Let people make their own financial decisions. Go and buy your own health insurance, your own plan, and we will give you a tax credit. And that means you have a job, you're working, and we will allow you to get dollar for dollar back, whether it's buying a new car in this program or your own health insurance.
And if you can't afford it, or if you decide to do something else with the money, but you show up in the emergency room anyway with a broken arm, then what?
Those people are going to be treated.
They're going to be treated anyway.
Know right now that those people.
Well, they'll be treated. Everyone is treated, right? Everyone is treated in America, from the poorest to the richest. Everyone gets treated. What we're talking about is who's going to pay for it.
Well, you're going to see. That's the whole point, is that you're going to pay for it. I am going to pay for it.
Here.
And what this does is it takes the employer out, and it allows portability, meaning I own this. And if my job shuts down or I want to change, I carry my own health insurance with me wherever I'm at. And with some regulatory scheme, it can work. And it gives the incentive to, if you have earned income and you are paying income taxes, guess what? The government will help you buy your own health insurance. But I'm getting to this whole program of buying cars at $30 or $40 billion, completely down the rat hole. If they had given people up to $10,000, $15,000 of their own tax money back for buying a car, the whole thing would have gone by the way. The industry would have been stimulated. And you know what? They should look at this right now for other durable goods. Buy a refrigerator. Buy a washing machine. Buy an American-made product. Something to get manufacturer stimulated. And guess what? You add a little of your own money, the government adds some money, and the whole industry is, the whole thing is rolling again.
Hey, I'm looking for a bass boat. Can we get that subsidized?
You know what? Why not? Why not stimulate manufacturing in this country? Meaning, if you're willing to put up $5,000 of your money in the bank, and the government saying, hey, listen, $5,000, it's your money anyways, it was tax money, you paid in, and you're going to stimulate the economy. And we all have heard, if you study any economics, of the multiplier effect. You spend $1, it multiplies to $5.
We got to move on. You got your quarters worth. Paul, can you stick with us a little bit longer?
Sure.
Bryan will continue with us on Beyond the Beltway as well. And by the way, we had a caller, John, listening to us, I believe, at WGVA in the Finger Lakes. In upstate New York. It's been a long time since we had somebody from upstate New York. John, if you're still listening, give us a call back. I know you had a drop off. 1-800-723-8229. We'll also hear from El Paso, Texas. He has an interesting perspective. We'll hear from Texas when we come back to Chicago.
I'm a human resources professional.
This is Chet from Sneed's Ferry, North Carolina.
Gray means you're old, period. Long in tooth. I use Just for Men. It makes me perform better.
So we asked, should a guy get rid of his gray with Just for Men?
Absolutely. I flat out tell him, guy, you got to do something with your hair. You got to make yourself look younger, because they cannot ask you how old you are.
For essential career tips and a free offer, go to justformen.monster.com. That's justformen.monster.com.
Introducing the Ally Bank 12-month high-yield CD. With such a great annual return of 2% APY, people think there's a catch. But no, no catch, no teaser rate, no limited time offer, no fine print, jargon, or legalese, no hidden tricks, traps, pitfalls, curveballs, or doublespeak. Just a 12-month high-yield CD with a rate that's among the most competitive in the country. Call Ally at 877-247-ALLY or go to allybank.com. Ally, straightforward. Member FDIC.
From Exeter, Massachusetts to El Paso, Texas, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway. I'm Bruce Dumont, 1-800-723-8289. Let's go to El Paso. Steve is listening to us on KTSM. Go ahead, Steve.
Hi, Bruce and everybody.
Very good. Go ahead.
Hey, just because this Cash for Conquerors program is popular doesn't mean it's a success. I really think it's a moral failure. For the last 20 years, I've driven high gas mileage economy cars. And I've done it not out of any sense that I wanted to save the planet. I like to drive. I drive a lot. And it helped me save money. So what they're doing, in effect, is saying, we're going to take Steve's tax dollars and give it to somebody else. I'd like to go buy a new car, but I don't have any clunkers to turn in. And this kind of stuff is an example of the immoral actions of our government. Taxing one person to get it to the pocket of another, and I'm sick of it.
Yes.
Well, you know,
rewarding
sort
of bad behavior.
This is part, again, I may only care about ideology, but let me repeat my metaphor from the first hour here. We're down in the ditch with the economy, and we're looking up. The tow truck driver has arrived in the form of the Obama administration and complaining about the rules being too complicated on the cash for clunkers or something like that. Seems to me that's like complaining about his haircut or that he has body odor or bad breath or something. I want to get the economy out of the ditch.
But also,
here we are nitpicking.
To speak to part of Steve's problem of a point though is, and I've said this over the last several years numerous times on this program. When the Clinton-Gore administration was in place, that was when there was the explosion of SUVs. Now, where was Mr. Green Jeans? Where was Mr. Vice President Gore? Where was he at that time telling people not to buy SUVs?
That was the free marketplace at work with its wisdom.
But Democrats usually like to give advice on how people should spend their dollars and their lives. Go ahead, Steve. Back to you.
Listen, his argument is specious. If you wanted to stimulate the economy, I have no problem with that. But by putting in an arbitrary rule that cuts out a large segment of the potential new car buying populace, and that's me, just because I don't have a clunker, that's immoral and wrong. Take the previous point that was just made a few minutes ago. If I'm contributing money for a new car, let the government match it. Don't make it contingent on me having a clunker.
Hey, Steve, I've got a. I'm trying to buy one of these right now. I've got a 2002 Ford Windstar. I qualify. You don't. Tough luck.
Yeah, that's the way.
That's what it's about. And I'll tell you, there's something else here that's immoral that nobody's thinking of. I mean, granted, I'm trying to take advantage of it. It's a good deal, but the problem I have morally with this is, why do my kids have to finance my car purchase? I don't understand that. And you talk about the tow truck analogy. Okay, the tow truck showed up, and then you get out of the tow truck, and you take a gun, and you stop any car driving down the street, and you say, pony up and pay for the tow truck. That's wrong, and that's what we're doing.
Well,
we're saying
there's another dynamic that we've got to bring into
yes,
play
Paul.
As well, as long as we're talking about things here. And if you remember back when the earth was cooling and Lee Iacocca first came out with buy a car, get a check. Remember when we had the first rebate program and everyone went, wow, that's cool, I'm going to do that. And then the industry said, we've got to do that. And so it wasn't only Chrysler. Ford had to answer. GM had to answer. Everybody else did too. What happens when this program is over? Do people then sit on their thumbs again and say, well, I'm not going to move until the program either gets expanded to include me or gets refunded in
comes
some way.
Back.
And do we have like a big sugar high and a crash that we were talking about before? I don't know. I don't know what the psychology of the market is.
Well, I'd hate to be a car dealer right now just because of that.
Yeah, good point. Let us go. I mentioned John was listening to us in the Finger Lakes in Penn, New York, listening to us on WGVA. John, nice, you're calling from one of the most beautiful areas of the country. Nice to hear from you tonight.
Well, thank you very much for taking my call. I really enjoyed your program here.
Well, you spread the word because we don't get nearly enough calls from that area of the country, and it's always nice to hear from New Yorkers.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'll tell you, there's a lot of people listening. Even though you're not hearing from them, they are certainly in tune.
Good to know. In fact, we're gonna have to come and do our show from the station up there sometime.
Oh, absolutely. Please come.
We'll do.
Welcome you. I've been listening to your program. A couple of my points have already been made, but I would like to mention a couple of things. I tried to take advantage of this program just as a matter of fact yesterday. I called a local Ford dealer, seeing how they did not take any stimulus money. I wanted to attempt to buy a Ford, trade in my Buick, and I was told, now mind you, this is a 1985 Buick car. It's only got 88,000 miles on it. They told me the car did not qualify because it lacked getting 1 mile per gallon that the government had recommended. Now I thought
difference between what you had and what you were buying?
No, I was told that
you missed it by a mile.
Yes, the government had restructured the gas mileage that my car was supposedly to get. This was a combined rating. I missed it by 1 mile per gallon.
So you got 19 miles per gallon.
I certainly would have bought a new
it's
car.
It's the differential. It's the differential, though, sir, between what you were trading in and what you were buying. Well, if what you're buying has to have at least 4 miles per gallon better than what you're junking.
Paul, it's more than that. There is a list of qualifying cars. If your car doesn't qualify and it's an 18 mile per gallon bottom, if you're getting 19 miles per gallon, your car does not qualify. It doesn't matter what the
differential is. When we're in break, what was the car again? I'll look it up.
It's a 1985 Buick Century.
Okay, I'll check it out.
Listen, on that note, however, we're out of time for our broadcast this evening. So, John, I thank you for your call.
Thank you, Paul Bryan.
Thank you very much. Drive Chicago. Longtime show on WLS Radio every Saturday morning. Also, our thanks to Lee Newcomb, the recorder of McLean County in Illinois. Also, a guy that knows a lot about automobiles. You've been trying to wheel and deal with your buying a new car for your daughter. We learned a lot about that.
I used to be in that business.
John, you know, it's a government program. It may be a little immoral, but, you know, hey, if everybody's doing it, you got to do it. John McCarron also joins us from Northwestern University, Medill School of Journalism, and the Chicago Tribune, and Gila Bronner. Gila Bronner, keep your eye on effective and efficient government and
Absolutely.
How our government is being spent. In fact, we'd like to have you back periodically to give kind of an update to see how the American Reinvestment and Recovery Act dollars are being spent. They're your dollars. Gila's got her eye on them, and she's watching them for you. Our time is up. I'm Bruce Dumont. Thanks to Tom Vera-Cruz and Ben Stewart for their assistance in the production of this program. Until next week, good night from Chicago.
I'm Felix. I've been doing body art and tattoos for over 15 years. It's amazing. I get people in here all the time who ask me about fading or removing a tattoo they don't want anymore. Up till this year, I've really had nothing to help that is effective and painless. And then I discovered Wrecking Balm. It's an easy 3-step daily fading system. In just a few months, the darkest, deepest pigments, they easily start to fade without any discoloring, blemishing, or scarring the skin. Wrecking Balm is really the best thing for tattoo regret. It's my only recommendation if you want to clear the canvas of some real funky body art.
Wrecking Balm, the devastatingly effective tattoo fade system. Undemanding daily fading. Zero pain. Zero discomfort.
Call right now for your in-home 60-day risk-free trial of Wrecking Balm at 1-800-507-4206. That's 1-800-507-4206. Fade your tattoo now by calling 1-800-507-4206. That's 1-800-507-4206.
With welcome rewards from Hotels.com, you get a free night after accumulating 10 nights with any of their partner hotels.
Surely my boutique hotel is not included in that.
Yes, it is, lady.
My band, Sned Leplin, stays in chain hotels just off the freeway, those included.
With Hotels.com, you bet, Mr. Brojangles.
What about a bed and breakfast?
Faux shizzle.
Hotels on the moon?
No.
Accumulate 10 nights, even at different hotels, and earn a free night. Welcome rewards from Hotels.com. Smart. So smart. Some restrictions apply. See site for details.
When you're really in pain, everything seems to add to it. Relief can't come fast enough. Now there's new Bayer Quick Release Crystals, a whole new form of pain relief from Bayer that dissolves quickly on your tongue. With an extra pain-relieving booster, it's ready to go to work faster than caplets or tablets, which take time to dissolve. So before you know it, you're feeling a whole lot
better.
New Bayer Quick Release Crystals with a bold citrus taste. Just rip, pour on your tongue, and expect relief fast. Take with water as directed.
Shaquille O'Neal for Icy Hot.
I need pain relief that won't mess with my grip.
The new Icy Hot No Mess Applicator. Powerful, targeted, long-lasting pain relief now in a roll-on applicator. No mess. Just maximum strength medicine for back, shoulders, knees, even arthritis. Massages in icy to dull the pain, hot to relax it away.
Wherever I hurt, wherever I go.
Stop pain right at the source with the new Icy Hot No Mess Applicator.
No pain, no mess.
For temporary topical pain relief, use only as directed.
I wasn't getting past a certain point with the interviews.
This is Tamar from Washington, D.C.
Gray kind of says, does he have the energy to do the job?
And then Tamar tried Just for Men.
And when I went into the interview, I just went into the interview with a new renewed energy or something. And it was the first time I left the place knowing I had the job. It really wasn't anything magical or anything, but it was magical to me.
For essential career tips and a free offer, go to justformen.monster.com. That's justformen.monster.com.